Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, reflections on death and dying. And before we explore that topic, I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey, the founder of Lucis Trust. Lucis Trust sponsors this show, and Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. The following thought comes from the works of Alice Bailey. Our ideas about death have been erroneous. We have looked upon it as the great and ultimate terror, whereas in reality it is the great escape, the entrance into a fuller measure of activity, and the release of the life form from the crystallized vehicle and an inadequate form. We've talked about this subject a number of times in the past. How does cultivating inner sight, how does it relate to death and dying?
It relates in the sense that both life and death have meaning that isn't always obvious. And the inner sight, the ability to recognize the subjective significance behind outer experience, is really important in understanding both life and death. I don't want people to think when they hear that opening thought that, well, if it's so great on the other side, maybe I'll hasten my exit and enter into that beautiful light. It would be nice if that were possible, but we know from the spiritual teachings of the ageless wisdom that are passed down from the beginning of humanity that there's no escaping one's lessons to be learned in this life, or there's no evading the lessons and experiences that each human being has to undergo to correct weaknesses and perfect character and so on. So if we have troubles and misfortunes in this life, they will simply wait for us if we take an early exit. In other words, if we hasten our departure through suicide or whatever. And so that's not the answer, just in case somebody misunderstood that. But this opening thought of Alice Bailey does promise that our traditional understanding of death, which is that when the body dies, that's it, that's the end of us. And as some religions teach, that we may, if we've been good, find some place in heaven that will cause us to live happily and blissfully but uneventfully, that all of that is really erroneous. Life on the other side of the veil, as it's called, is actually fuller life, not a place of inactivity, but real learning and real growth. But somehow the lessons here on earth are a particular gift, and they have their own significance.
And those lessons are, well, they've been coming out lately in the scientific studies of near-death experiences, haven't
mm-hmm.
they?
Yeah.
A lot of these people who have had these experiences of near-death, of leaving the body but returning have come back with a lot of information and valuable insights into what the other side of the veil looks like and the experience they've had there. And we can learn a lot from these near-death experiences.
And they're more scientifically studied and more documented now than in the past. I think it started with the book Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody, which was published in about 1975. And then Kenneth Ring, who was of the University of Connecticut for many years, did a great deal of study into near-death experiences. And another physician, Melvin Morse, has written extensively on it. He first began to be aware of these experiences with his own patients, I think, who relayed the encounters they had with what they believed was the other side during surgery and critical health traumas. So these people, and no doubt many other experts that I can't name, have interviewed and documented probably hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals who have had what are called NDEs, or near-death experiences. And Dale has actually interviewed a few of them years ago.
Yes, years ago we've talked with several people that have had near-death experiences, and a couple of them have had real, what they call core experiences. In other words, they've gone back very deep and they've encountered beings of light, and they have seen their whole life flash in front of them, and they've learned the lessons, and they felt the great love that exists on the other side, and many of them are reluctantly come back because they know they have to, but they don't really want to, because the feelings of love and peace are just so overwhelming on the other side. And these are the things that they bring back with them.
I think there's a uniform quality to these near-death experiences in the sense of the love that you mention and an encounter with light that is overpowering. I just recently read a book by Kenneth Ring that attempts to relay the lessons and experiences of people who have had NDEs, because he believes that all of us, whether or not we've had those kinds of experiences, can learn from them and apply them to our own life. And he's identified a few common conclusions that NDE people have come away with: the sense of brilliant light that is revealing and yet non-judgmental. There's a sense of seeing themselves in a new and more comprehensive light, with a clear awareness of exactly who they are, flaws and strengths as well, and yet without a sense of condemnation, self-condemnation, or of judgment, or of hopelessness. Simply an encounter with what they call their authentic self, and at the same time an awareness of an overwhelming love, not only for themselves, but that all people, all human beings, all living things are embraced by. And many experience also a kind of awareness that is so inclusive, so comprehensive, that they describe it as a knowledge of the universe. But that knowledge seems to vanish when they return from that plane of consciousness that they were on. But at the time they experience that knowledge, they feel they have the key to unlock all the secrets to the universe.
And these experiences are very valuable in our learning about what death really is, especially here in the West, in our culture, that we have, as it says in that opening quote, we have very erroneous notions about what death is, and that all the way from death is the end of everything, and I no longer will exist with death, which is an erroneous understanding, an erroneous belief, I think. And the near-death experiences, those people that have shown us what it's like on the other side, that we still do exist on the other side, even though we're momentarily separated from our physical body, that we still continue to think and feel and see and have all the faculties that we had, and even at a greater extent than we had in the physical body. And this must mean something, because the evidence is so overwhelming, and literally millions of people have had these experiences in the world.
It's interesting that a point Kenneth Ring made was that the near-death experience seems to reveal to the individual that he is two selves, a kind of a divided person. He said that they become aware, as I mentioned before, of their authentic or true self, and they see it in comparison to their socially conditioned self, the person we traditionally think of ourselves as, and the person that our friends and our family and our coworkers and our neighbors continually remind us, because they see us through their own lens. And none of this is who we really are. When they make that transition into that higher level of consciousness, they encounter an authenticity about themselves that is really kind of fascinating, because it isn't that they see themselves as perfect beings. They see themselves as who they really are. They come into touch with other dimensions of their nature that they instinctively recognize as the complete expression of themselves, but it has been hidden away. And I wonder if this is related to Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, who used to always say, follow your bliss. He was trying to tell people that we all of us have in our heart of hearts a sense of what we're here for, what we're meant to do, what we really love. And Kenneth Ring, in his discussions with these NDE people, finds that they come back from the experience with a clearer awareness of why they are here on Earth, what they are meant to do here, and it might be very mundane lessons of raise a family, be a better husband, whatever. But they come away with a clear sense of why they're here, what they're supposed to learn, and what their responsibilities are. And I wondered if that sense of authenticity is related to why Jesus always spoke to people that they must be as little children. He said, except you become as little children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. I always wondered about that. Why should we be as little children? That sounds kind of demeaning. When I was a little child, I wasn't very smart or very coordinated in myself. So why would I want to be a little child? Maybe he was saying, be one's simplest, truest self. Because when you're a little child, maybe that's who you really are before you learn to cover it up and mask it in the effort to please others and meet their expectations.
Yes, I think that's right. It has to do with the simplicity of the child, you know, in the child's consciousness. It hasn't really fully developed yet and become complex. And so it's the looking at the world with the simplicity of a child. And that's kind of the state of consciousness that will carry us into the kingdom of God, because that is a level of consciousness that is characterized by synthesis and simplicity.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, reflections on death and dying. We have a special offer from Lucis Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book, Death, The Great Adventure. Death, The Great Adventure is a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. Just to give you an example of some of the excerpts and some of the literature that you'll find within Death, The Great Adventure, here's a quote from the book, and I quote, "The present cycle is the end of the age, and the next 200 years will see the abolition of death, as we now understand that great transition, and the establishing of the fact of the soul's existence." And once again, that's a quote from the Alice Bailey book, Death, the Great Adventure. And the special offer comes in the form of shipping and handling, if you'd like to read the book in its entirety. It's available for $11. So what you need to do is send us a check or money order to Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Ask for Death, the Great Adventure. That's the Alice, one of the Alice Bailey books. And send your check or money order, $11, to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And also, we appreciate your donations, large and small. They've certainly been an expression to us of your support, and we'd like it to continue to keep us on the air. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us for any reason whatsoever, give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. That's our toll-free number. That's 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. That's 1-866. Think of New York Lucis. Our website, www.lucistrust.org. And on that website, you can find a lot of information about Lucis Trust. And a lot of people key into the website because they listen to our previously archived library of radio shows. I was thinking it's all extremely interesting. Some of the contemporary authors that you're quoting who do some real scientific research on near-death experiences, and it's wonderful we're living in that kind of an age where that kind of information can be given to us, and it's certainly more credible that way. But as interesting as that contemporary literature is, I'm also interested in the literature of Alice Bailey. Is she more or less parallel to these contemporary authors as far as what she writes, as far as life after death?
Yes, I found that in reading the contemporary literature on NDEs, that putting that in juxtaposition with the ageless wisdom teaching on death is really revealing, because Alice Bailey taught that the life as we know it is life in form. We tend to think that life here on Earth is life. And Dale and I were talking just a little while ago about how when people speak about the beginning of life, all the controversial discussion on when does life begin, life is, and naught can take or touch that life, an ancient scripture says. Life simply is. Life begins in form at a certain stage, and it gives up that form at another stage. But that doesn't mean that life has vanished. It's simply transited in and out of forms. And she said that we do that over and over again. In fact, she said death comes to us all. Every living thing, everything that inhabits a form of any sort, whether it's a shell or a leaf or a human being, will die. All forms come to an end. All is governed by the mind of God as he carries out his unknown purposes. And yet she said it is literally true that not a sparrow falleth without its fall being noticed by those great beings who watch over and guard our planet's life. The great misassumption, the great tragedy really of life on Earth is the belief that this existence in form is all we have, and that's what makes grief and the loss of loved ones so unbearable to those who are left behind. And yet life and death are absolutely normal and will come to every one of us. We act as if it's an aberration when somebody dies. We're shocked and surprised and stricken, but we don't stop to think, that person simply left a little ahead of me. I'm going to make my own exit at some time. And whatever stage that is, whether in my youth or in my old age, it's the right time from the standpoint of the soul, according to the ageless wisdom. The soul determines the moment of death, unless we're talking about an accident. And those, I guess, are a special question.
Yeah, those things happen. Accidents do happen. But in the normal course of the death process, whether it's a slow withdrawal from the physical body or very quick, through a disease of some kind, it is, generally speaking, the soul's decision when to sever that link. There is a life thread that emanates from the soul, a life cord, and the cord that of consciousness. And the life thread is anchored in the heart, and the consciousness thread is anchored in the head. And at the moment of death, these threads are severed by the soul. It's like pulling the plug, in a sense.
That's graphic.
And that's...
It's only one stage from kicking the bucket.
Well, you could do that, too. But it's something like that. I mean, the electrical supply is cut off,
yeah.
And the consciousness is...
the plug is pulled.
...cut off, and the life thread is cut, and there is no more connection with that physical body. And then the soul departs and goes back to its source, mm-hmm. on the inner planes. And this is, I think, one of the things we have to begin to realize and talk about, especially here in our Western culture, which we're so form-oriented, we're so oriented to this physical body and identified with the physical, and everything in the physical world is so important. But we need now to begin to turn this perspective around and see it from the top down, in other words, from the perspective of the soul and not from the perspective of the physical world.
There's a wonderful line from the Alice Bailey books that talks about what you're saying. She calls it the restorative aspect of death, that something, some living thing is restored to its, almost as implying to its proper state of being, its full consciousness on a higher plane.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that restorative aspect of death is why the Hindus always cremate their dead. They build a pyre, I guess it's called, of wood, and put the body on top of that pyre and set it ablaze. And that literally puts to combust the body that is no longer needed. Now, some people might view that as kind of horrific, but I've always seen that as rather beautiful, that it allows the soul to be absolutely free of its now deceased carcass. And I mean no disrespect, but that is exactly how I would probably view my body when I've left it behind due to disease and old age. It's become a carcass. Why not put the torch to it and set the spirit free?
Yeah, the fire is a great purifying mm-hmm. agent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what it purifies, not only the substance of the body, the physical substance, but it helps to in the purification of the emotional nature and the mental nature as well, because it severs the connection right away. There is no longer a great pull on the soul to reincarnate right away into another earth family, earth body. And so it frees the soul. It liberates the soul more quickly.
There are some interesting developments in death. Just, I think, recently in the New York Times, there was an article about eco death, I think it was called, ecologically correct burial, which is becoming more and more of a trend. And apparently it's a field, an aspect or a field of the burial profession that enables people to be buried in a simple pine coffin without embalming. And it's quite controversial with the profession of morticians and so on. But obviously people are thinking in new ways about how to dispose of the body and how to integrate the person and his physical body with our Mother Earth. And it's an interesting approach to death, cremation, as we've discussed. But all of this needs, as you say, to be talked about and considered and worked out with one's family the case of Terry Schiavo was also a chance to highlight the need for living wills and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Make preparations.
Right, and it's a very necessary discussion that is needed today, and we shouldn't fear this. I think fear is perhaps the biggest obstacle that we have facing us today.
What are we afraid of?
Well, I don't know, afraid that this is going to be the end of me, afraid of my existence. I've read that recently in the New York Times Magazine. The author was afraid that her existence would end with death. And so I'm sure many people feel that way. But it needs to be discussed and to help us to begin to rethink this whole question of death and what it really is.
Well, that's the great gift of the people who have had the near-death experiences, that they can return and verify without any question that life does exist apart from the body. And we can all take their experiences and their accounts deeply into our own consciousness. And each of us has to conclude whether we believe them or not. But to me, they are great testimonials to the existence of life beyond the body. So this whole field that has opened up in recent years should be a wonderful assurance that not only do we not lose ourselves when we die, but we actually probably regain a fuller, comprehensive understanding of who we really are. We enter into fuller life. And that's an aspect of death that we haven't fully appreciated, probably because, as you say, we're so attached to the form.
And there is a great deal of information in the Alice Bailey books about this, about the subject of death, and before and after and during death. And so I urge anyone who wants to look it up.
Please take advantage of the special offer from Luce's Publishing Company, and that's the Alice Bailey book upon which this show is based, Death, The Great Adventure, which is a compilation of extracts on the spiritual meaning of death from the books of Alice Bailey. What you need to do is send a check or money order, $11, to Luce's Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, that's a check or money order, $11. Ask for the book, Death, The Great Adventure. Send the check or money order to Lucis, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Publishing, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. If you need to call us for any reason whatsoever, give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you.